You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Matt Chandler, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dehati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, we're here for another episode of the New Churches Podcast. You know, Clint runs this thing, and I never, is it the newchurches.com podcast or is it a New Churches Podcast? So I use it interchangeably, but you get it. Newchurches.com is our website, and it's the New Churches Podcast as well. So we're having a conversation today about the issue of really sustainability. So my field, I'm a missiologist. So a key part of being a in the missiological field is helping churches get to sustainability, and people define that different ways. So for example, in missiology, we actually talk about the three self. And the three self idea is that churches would be self-governing, self-propagating. You know, so the idea of these selves would be kind of how a church ultimately would get to the place that it is a standalone congregation. So a standalone congregation. So so what does it look like? I mentioned self-governance, self-support, and self-propagation. Those are the three. But so we maybe, you know, if I'm teaching missiology, that's always the way we're going to phrase and have some of that conversation. But I think for us, we're asking the question, if I'm starting a church and also building on our prior episode of talking about serial church planters, if I'm starting a church, what does it look like? It's not the end goal, but there certainly is a substantive goal to get a church to be self-sufficient, if you want to just put that in the broad sense of the word. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We have two guests. We've introduced in the past Jared Huntley. He's right now the pastor of preaching and vision at Pillar Church in Washington, D.C., but headed to San Antonio to plant there. John Wooster, which you're going to see that, and you're going to have to know the city in Boston to know that it's not Worcester, but it's Wooster. He's actually planted, pastored 8 churches. And so we've introduced him before. I won't go through all the introduction as well. But let me mention to you a resource. The Church Planting Masterclass is a great place to get started if you're interested in learning more about church planting. It's completely free. It's actually a world-class course offered exclusively at newchurches.com. Best of church planting leaders across the spectrum. We've got people like David Platt and Trillia Newbell. I'm part of that. Dehati Lewis, Matt Chandler, and others. With more than 80 short video lessons, the masterclass really is a comprehensive overview of the church planting experience. Okay, so here we are talking now about sustainability. I'm going to go first to you, John. Sustainability, I mean, it should be a named goal for, I think, almost every church planter. I say almost every because I'm close to saying every, but there may be some unique situations. But it seems that the first step in becoming sustainable as a church is to determine areas that require outside support to maintain. So what are some areas that we want to move from outgoing support, outside support, to ultimately sustainability, church planters working towards sustainability? What would some of that look like?
Well, I do think it's an important goal. I think as a sequential planter, you want to begin with the end in mind. You want to know where you're headed. So right from the beginning, you're thinking about leaders that you can raise up and possible pastors somewhere along the line that can either take over or come in and take over. So you're all the time working to think about that. I would say this, I think it's an important goal, but I don't think it should be the primary preoccupation with a church planter. I think he should be consumed with how am I going to reach the most people in the fastest possible way. That should be what he's focused on and thinking about in a major kind of way. And if he does a good job with that, then sustainability, long-term sustainability, takes care of itself. He's got people from the harvest that are in his church. There's enough of them that they're going to be able to support the church. And outside support, if you're really seeing lost adults come to Christ, a lot of them, then outside support will also want to be a part of what you're doing. It's kind of like they want to get behind something successful. And so churches will come in and oh, wow, you've reached that many people this year. You're doing well. How can we help you? And so you actually get more support by focusing not on support, but by focusing on doing the work of the harvest. So that's kind of my one thought on that. I have other thoughts, but that's one thought on that. Give Jared a chance to share something.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd push back a little bit on a part of what John said, and that I think, you know, the primary focus, I do agree, is in reaching the most people as you possibly can. I'm not sure I would say as fast as you can. I think in many ways, like, you know, how quickly we're able to reach a certain number of people is really outside of our control. I think we need to be sowing the gospel seed, you know, broadly. But I do think that an equal emphasis from day one needs to be placed on developing leaders around you. I think that starts with, if at all possible, planting as part of a team. There are scenarios where that's just not possible. I get that. And there are biblical examples of where that didn't happen. And so it's not that there's no precedence for, you know, planting solo. But I think if you can, even if you can't plant with a team, try to raise up a team as quickly as possible. Because if everything is dependent upon you as the planter, then you don't have something sustainable. Like the very definition of sustainable means it's going to keep going whether you're there or not. And so you need to be able to build a leadership structure that can survive you know, being removed from the equation. So, and then obviously, you know, financial sustainability is important. And I think that just depending on your context, that can look different. Like when we were planting in Canada, we planted in a poor neighborhood, really poor area. And I knew just long-term that even if we did really well, that church wasn't going to be able to support a full-time pastor. Right. So from day one, we were setting things up to go, okay, I couldn't get a part-time job because of visa issues. So I knew I couldn't be the long-term pastor here because I had to fundraise my entire salary. So that was the only way I was going to stay there the whole time. So from day one, it was like, okay, I'm looking for local indigenous guys that I can raise up and pour into so that they can lead this thing long-term, because that's what's going to be sustainable for this church in this location. But that's just one example.
No, I like it a lot. I like that example, because I think when we're raising up leaders, it's interesting that when I talk sustainability, most people heard financial sustainability. And what you both went to was leadership sustainability. You said leaders, even to the point where, Jared, your description was a co-vocational church planter or pastor that would follow you. So success is not, and I'm going to be careful, I'll say this. I think too often people say, well, success is a full-time pastor pastoring a self-supporting church. It doesn't have to be a full-time pastor. That is not the biblical norm, to say the least. And it's certainly not in missiology around the globe. That's not the case. So, but it's interesting, in both of your cases, you went to raising up leaders. So we want to raise up men and women who are going to serve in these different roles in the church, so that you have, when you leave, not, there's always a vacuum created, but there are other people who are already sharing the load. And I think that's really a key thing. So here's the question I'd have for Jared, and then we'll go to John. How do you think that way? Because Jared, you were sort of saying that that's part of what you did in Canada. Is how do you think that way from the beginning? And then John, I'm going to ask you to jump in as well, because again, this is something you've done 8 times. So I'm thinking by time 3, you're thinking about this from the beginning. So Jared, first to you and then to John.
I think like being intentional about giving other people space to lead and platforming other people. I think there's a real temptation for church planters to want to try to do everything on our own. I think a lot of times church planters have really strong opinions. That's just something that seems to be indicative of a lot of church planters in general. And we have strong opinions about how, you know, things ought to be done, but really trusting that the Holy Spirit has gifted other people, and that and identifying and being aware of areas where you're weak, and then allowing other people to kind of run in their lane where they might be gifted in an area where you're weak, and realizing and trusting that that'll actually be better long term for your church than if you were to just step in and try to do it yourself. So I really think that's how you set the tone from the start, is be intentional about doing that.
Okay, John, I'm going to have you answer in just a minute, but I want to tell a funny story, because for me, you have to, and this is going to be, John's going to appreciate this, Jared, but you're too young to appreciate this. For me, the turning point when I realized it was okay for me to plant a church, to create it sustainable, help it be sustainable, and to move on, the church I just preached at, my with the church I founded in Pennsylvania when John and I knew each other well, but was actually the Whitney Houston song. And it goes, and I won't sing anymore. I will always love you. But then it says, but I'm just not what you and then it's need. So for me, ironically, and I'm not saying there was some word from the Lord, but I recognized that I was not the right person long-term to be all that God had for this church. And that was a key moment in that, in the journey for me. So anyway, John, come back and kind of weigh in. You don't have to talk about Whitney Houston at all, I promise. But what are some of those things you set up for sustainability before, even at the beginning?
Well, I like what you said there. And it reminds me of something too, is that one of the things in my decision to move on had to do with what do I feel like is best for the church?
Yeah.
I think a sequential church planner is sort of a jack of all trades, but not a master of any. He's not great at anything, but he can do a lot of things. And so you find people to take the areas that you're weak in and plug them in and do better with those. So I think that's, and so when I decided to move on, I said, well, I think somebody else can take what I've got here and take it and do better than I can do with it. So that gave me the emotional freedom to move on, to start another one and do what a lot of other people can't do, is get it to up to the first 100, 200 people. That's hard for people, not as many people seem to be able to do that, especially with conversion girls.
Yeah, I think you're right on. And I love that. So for that's, and that's the gift that you've been to so many, is you've planted a church, heavy conversion growth, created a culture of evangelism. Now, again, you both went to, and we all talked about raising up leaders. I love the fact that the person who succeeded me at the church I mentioned earlier with my Whitney Houston moment, I hope I did those years right, that he actually served there for over 25 years, just announced he's stepping down from that role. And so I love that. I love that we're able to, I mean, he was better. He was what they needed. He did a better job than I would do and did. And I love that. So we went to leaders, and I think that's the right place to start, but we also got to get to financial stability. And financially speaking, sustainability is often a big challenge, particularly when you're reaching people who are not believers or, you know, John, you mentioned heavy conversion growth. So how long, is there a reasonable period of time? And I'm going to ask John first and then go to Jared, because Jared, your experience may be different because you just planted in an economically depressed area as well. So John, how do you time and look for that getting to financial sustainability? And let's just first ask that. And then if you wouldn't mind, answer, how do you get there and help build a financially sustainable church as well, beyond the developing of leaders, but there must be some strategies you have. So how long and how?
Okay. Well, when you talk about how long, you're talking about speed. And so Jared pushed back on me that you shouldn't be trying to reach people as fast as you can. You
should, tell me.
You know, I guess the alternative, not go as fast as you can. But I would push that in planting a church, you have the best opportunity for the fastest growth and the fastest growth momentum, the younger in the church you're in. It's just like plants, sprouts, or babies, they grow fastest naturally during the earliest days. So you want, as a planter, to put as much of your energy into the plant in the early days to get it, launch it, to get it off the ground, to get the momentum going, to reach a lot of people as fast as you can. And it's out of that mix of the what you create, of the larger group that you create, that's where you find the leaders that'll be able to sustain it. It's hard to find a leader out of 10 or 15, 20 people. But if you have 100 people or 150 people, there are some leaders that have come to the surface and take things over. So I would just say speed is an important thing. I think Paul had him pray for him. Pray that the gospel, pray for me that the gospel would spread rapidly. And so I think that, I think it's a good goal for a church planter. And I think church planters ought to look at it as the church plant is like a series of sprints, not like a long-term marathon. And be geared up, sprint at the beginning, have some times off and got to do things to sustain yourself and your family. But it's a series of sprints, not just a long paced out approach to getting this church going. So I have a little different way of thinking about that. And I think that gives the chance, the best chance for the church to get to the size that it's sustainable. And if it doesn't, then you have to be ready, like Jared said. If it doesn't get there, if you do the best you can to grow as fast, and it doesn't grow as fast, like the one in Canada did not get to the place. And so again, in that situation, I found two bivocational pastors from within the church. They were able to take over the church and they'd be able to maintain it. They haven't grown it a whole lot, but it's still there and they're maintaining it. And so they've done well. But it wasn't at the place to support somebody full time that they needed to do to live in Toronto. So that's a couple of thoughts I have on that. I think fast growth is a very important goal for a church planter.
Yeah, I get that. You know, I think we can sometimes like over spiritualize these conversations, Ed. And at the bottom line is, at the end of the day, like, these churches need to be able to be financially self-sustaining, right? And so like, they have to be able to support the ministries they lead. I think as far as a timeline, I think it varies depending on the context. I generally think around 5 years is a reasonable amount of time to expect a church to be financially self-sustainable. I've seen it happen much quicker, you know, like it happened much quicker for us, you know, here. And then, you know, it's funny is that in Canada, even though we planted in a really poor area, we were financially self-sustaining as soon as I left and my salary went off the books, because they didn't have to pay me anymore and they had a bivocational guy. So again, like, it's not necessarily about how much money, but it's also like, what's your strategy? What's your goal? You know, do you have reasonable expectations for the kind of ministry this church can support from day one? Is important. And I think, you know, to become financially self-sustainable, yeah, it's important. We need to be reaching people and seeing people come to Christ, because the way that you become financially self-sustainable is if you have more people attending your church. And we want to see conversion growth, right? We're not looking to, you know, steal sheep from other churches. We're looking to reach lost people and disciple them into mature followers of Jesus who are going to give of their time and their talent and their resources to support the ministry of the church. But you know, I think at the end of the day, like, one of my favorite passages is 2 Corinthians chapter 4, where Paul talks about how, you know, we've renounced disgraceful, underhanded ways. We refuse to practice cunning or to tamper with God's word. And so at the end of the day, the reason I bring that passage up is that we can't make the primary goal be we've got to get financial self-sustainability. We don't want to sell our souls to get there, right? At the end of the day, like, we've got to trust God to bring about that growth. But there is a practical, you know, component to this, that if we don't reach more people and if more people don't start attending our church, then you're not going to become financially self-sustainable. So you've got to be in the harvest, you've got to be sharing the gospel, and you got to be intentional about that.
Okay, so good. So, and I like that. And I don't want to be, I mean, I'm with you, leaders and discipling, reaching people, they're going to be key. I'm actually like what John said about fast growth. People might nuance that in different ways, but I'm tracking with you because I think it matters to get to sustainability. So how do you introduce, John, because you've been at these 2 years to 5 years, I think is the longest. How do you start introducing giving and getting, you know, the outside giving is going down, you would assume, and the inside giving is going up. Do you do anything intentional to move that to self-sustainability since you're there for 2 to 5 years? Or is it just the same as anything else? You just teach stewardship as it comes?
Well, I mean, basically you teach it as it comes. I don't make, in the early days when it's evangelistic growth going on, I don't emphasize it a lot on Sunday mornings, the giving and the money. We mention it, we say something about it, but I don't make it a big push. But when new people are going to join the church, I teach about it. I teach about tithing and I teach about giving and have examples of that. And I promote leaders who are, and I appoint leaders who are examples of giving. And that helps to raise the bar of that value in the church. And so we work towards it. And again, when people see in the church and outside the church, they see God at work and they see baptisms happening, they want to be a part of that. They're excited about it. Their lives are changed. The new converts that come in, their lives are changed. Now, it's true that off the bat, they're not used to tithing. They're not used to giving that kind of way. And a lot of them, it takes them a while to grow into that. And they've got themselves in financial strain. But I've seen it happen and their lives are really transformed. They give and the church becomes supporting. Yeah. So again, reaching as many as you can, genuinely reaching them, not just getting people to come. And I go back to, I don't think the focus is on, we've got to get self-supporting. The focus is on how do we reach more people and believing that God is going to provide to the people he reached what the church needs. And if it doesn't grow as fast as you think it, if you want it to grow, then you can always punt back to this. And probably what Paul did. Paul probably raised a lot of support in the teams and stuff like that. And then he left it in the hands of lay people that oftentimes in his church plants. So,
I'd agree with John that I think, you know, when people are genuinely transformed by the gospel, they'll give. I also just want to add, I think a really important component of this is church membership. And even in the church membership mm-hmm. process, like teaching mm-hmm. about giving and also being clear about that's the expectation for members of the church to give. I'll use this as a quick just example. I just happened to look last week at our church here. Part of this is because we're in Capitol Hill, but I also am really just amazed by this. Our members of our church are averaging $72 a week per person in giving, which is, I don't know, Ed, you probably know what the national average is, but I know it's way higher.
Yeah.
And I really think that goes back to just an emphasis on healthy church membership and on making sure that our church members know that they've got ownership in this, that this is their church, that this is not, they're not coming to watch the professionals do the work of ministry, but we're equipping them to do the work of ministry and that they each have an important role. And part of that role is included in that role is giving. And I think if you do that, then you're going to see really healthy patterns of giving and committed church members. And that's going to help towards financial self-sustainability.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Good comments for each of you. We need to wrap up the conversation. So let me just say to our listeners, this is a key area, and don't be put off by the fact that we think you moving towards sustainability is an important goal. The rapidity of such that John's emphasized, the importance of building community that holds each other accountable and holds up the leadership that both have emphasized and more. So again, this is a key issue. We will talk more about this in future episodes as well. So thanks for listening to this and every newchurches.com podcast. Thanks.
It is so important that your church be prepared with an appropriate response when someone reports some sort of sexual or physical or emotional abuse. We've got a tool that's going to help you do this. It's called Becoming a Church That Cares Well for the Abused. This video course brings together top experts from various fields, and it's designed to help you and your leaders understand and implement the best practices in the event of an abuse scenario at your church or your school or ministry. You can find everything that you need to offer the course. It's totally free, including the videos and a handbook. You can find everything over at newchurches.com.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.